Hello and welcome yet again to that wonderful thing called the Reed Rothbard Podcast. My name is Daniel and with me is Robert Johnson. How are we doing, Robert, today?
Just trying to make sense of the world, Daniel. Muddling through, trying to generate, you know, an idea that sounds semi-coherent.
Yeah, certainly a lot going on. And as we have been making shows, we always tease the audience, say, hey, we're going to come back to you with a plan and real good content that's been well thought out, researched, or we're just going to be two guys talking. And we end up being the two guys talking because shit keeps happening. So no matter what we plan in the days before, so much occurs leading up to when we talk that it almost demands immediate attention, like today.
Right. We're recording this on Friday, July the 8th. And just yesterday, the 7th, a man opened fire sniper style on a protest in Dallas that was protesting some murders of some black men by cops for essentially no reason. And what is it, like, the current death toll is like six cops or five cops? I think it's five cops, but like a bunch of them are hit. And just trying to make sense of it all. I mean, there isn't really a whole lot of sense to be made, but trying to organize my thoughts about this. Hopefully I'll have some ideas and things to say. We'll find out.
Yeah, I agree. I'm still formulating my thoughts on this as well. And I'd like to caution everyone listening that some of the things that we're going to say, taken out of context, might appear insensitive or whatever. And, you know, again, we're still trying to figure it out on our side. But as you were saying, Robert, that there were recently two black men killed in circumstances that were questionable, and they were videotaped, or at least video was of some of the action, some of the event was captured and shown, and people are understandably upset about this. And, you know, in the climate in recent years has been a number of incidents that are somewhat similar in nature that appear to be focused on a race angle because it's, you know, black men involved, black people involved in these altercations with police. And many times they're unjustified in their actions, the police. Though, you know, I think the narrative on a few of them has been that they were unjustified when it turns out that they actually were possibly, like, the Ferguson stuff, Michael Brown, where he was allegedly actually assaulting the officer prior to the shooting.
Yeah. I mean, you're talking about, but would that situation have even taken place had that not officer not, had the job not existed, obviously it wouldn't have happened. I would like to call into question the legitimacy of having these costumed thugs running around initiating violence against people. When a cop tells you to do something, that is a threat by a guy who is going to attack you if you don't do what he says. Now, you have anybody else do that. If you have me do that, if I go up to somebody and say, you need to do what I say or else I'm going to stick a gun in your face, or I'm going to throw you to the ground and tie your hands up, you'd call me a thug, and rightfully so. But since everybody's in this mass psychosis that if, as long as you put on some sort of a costume and enough people, like the majority, say that these people have the right to go around attack people for an increasingly long laundry list of reasons and excuses and justifications that grows exponentially, you're going to run into situations where more and more people are going to be killed. And I would argue when you're up facing like this mad dog violent attacker guy, it's not the moral imperative isn't on me to act incredibly perfectly. I'm being threatened. I'm being coerced to do a certain thing. I'm not the guy that is going around initiating force against people. So I'd like to get the benefit of the doubt. How I react to violence is, you know, not necessarily up to me. It's I'm still formulating these thoughts. Sorry.
Well, based on what you said, let's just clarify a couple of things. The mad dogs, the rabid dogs you're talking about, would be the police officers, correct? That's what you're saying?
Well, they are trained to act as if they are the authority. They have the right to go around and attack people. They don't call it attacking people. They call it enforcing the law and protecting the innocent. But what it is they go around and threaten people and coerce them and attack them. So they follow their training. They don't necessarily, you can't necessarily reason with them. So if you go and you logically discuss, you know, it's wrong to initiate violence, they don't give a shit. They are there to assert their authority. If they see a challenge to that authority, they're going to react violently. So that's why I call them like a mad dog. because you cannot reason with them. They are there to dominate you and to exude and exert their will upon you. So that's why I call them Mad Dog.
All right. Well, that sounds like we jumped straight into the very controversial waters here. Questioning the police authority just in general. And I don't want to say that there aren't good people who happen to be police officers or anything like that. We're questioning the whole system of authority as is presently in place, where police officers are told that they can act above and beyond what a normal person can do. Somehow magical powers have been bestowed upon them. And this is a Lark and Rose argument. You know, how is a right that you and I do not have transferred to a third party if you and I decide to transfer something we don't have to them? You know, like, where does that moral authority come from? And he argues, that it's just the belief in authority that is the effect that allows them to get away with this type of stuff. And
right, a statist will argue that, well, it's necessary for people to be around and initiate force against people in order to enforce some whatever law to make people behave properly. But like you're saying, how do you give this moral authority to initiate force against people? How do you give what you don't have? So how can you and I, who do not possess it, or anybody else, give to anybody else the right to do it? It doesn't exist. So that's why we say authority is a myth. Authority is just people, threats and violence. If you don't do what I say, I will attack you.
Yeah, I like how the defiance to authority is now considered a mental disorder, yet the actual disorder is the belief in authority.
Yeah, I wonder if there's ever going to be a day when the DSM puts the belief in authority in there as a psychological disorder. I'm not holding my breath.
Yeah, you wouldn't last very long holding your breath on that one. So it sounds like we're not taking the race angle on this just yet, but it seems to be the thing that people want to talk about, so I think it bears some discussion. Now, the fact that these are black people who have been involved in these altercations that have been much publicized in the recent years and then, you know, of course, in the last few days, it makes one think that this is a race issue, you know, because that's what gets publicized. But counter to the media-driven narrative and the prevailing thought on all this, the statistical evidence, which I don't really like going in that direction because you can pretty much say whatever you want with statistics, but the likelihood of a black person versus a white person getting shot by a cop, it's actually a higher risk to a white person. All right, so taking a look at the statistics compiled by the Washington Post of the black population in the United States is 12%, and the white population is roughly 62%. And the police shootings have been 50% white victims and 26% black, so that appears to be a disparity. You know, 12% of the population makes up 26% of the shootings. But if you adjust the statistics for the people who are actually involved in the crimes that are committed, so like the number of robberies and murders and assaults, even though the black population in those areas, the 75 biggest counties in this study, the black population is 15%, yet they were involved in 62% of robberies, 57% of murders, 45% of assaults. So even though they were a small percentage of the population, their involvement in these violent offenses were disproportionately large. And I'm not trying to paint a brush, you know, that it's all black people or whatever. I'm just, these are what the numbers are. You know, statistics and numbers aren't, facts aren't racist, right? That's what Ben Shapiro says.
So Jeff, you are.
Yeah, right. And that'll be the comeback on this one. Oh, you're just a racist. But no, I'm just 2009 statistics from the Bureau of Justice. 62% of robberies, 57% of murders, and 45% of assaults. Black perpetrators or alleged perpetrators in counties where they are roughly 15% of the population. So if you consider, you know, the disparity between the number of general overall population, you know, it appears that there is a higher percentage of blacks being involved in these police altercations. But when you adjust for the crimes, the violent crimes that are being perpetrated, that in my mind looks to overcompensate for that.
So are you saying that the cops are justified in feeling more threatened when they're dealing with a black person?
Well, that's a loaded question. I would say that the numbers are on the side of them who believe they are doing their job, even if it's immoral and shouldn't be in place. The numbers support the idea that they need to be on higher guard when it comes to people of different races. The numbers back that up.
All right, so they're not just crazy people.
Right, yeah, it's not condoning what they're doing at all. It's just saying that the numbers back up that if there's a white person and a black person, the black person will appear to be a greater risk. And we will be accepting your hate mail any moment. But, you know, do look at the study. It's going to be down below. There's going to be a link to it down below.
So, and that's a pragmatic argument for the cop behavior. But we got to talk about the massive numbers of laws that are on the books that are just increasing these altercations. I mean, we're seeing people call for banning guns or making more things illegal. We're not talking about there shouldn't have been any kind of altercation in the first place. They shouldn't even have a reason to go up and talk to these people. These are not violent crimes. These are crimes, quote unquote, that don't hurt anybody. So they shouldn't even be crimes.
Well, let me back up.
There should be no excuse for these cops to even talk to these people.
Can we back up just for a moment?
No. It's already happened.
So I'm pointing out the numbers to get race sort of removed from the argument by saying that the numbers are supporting that whites are killed disproportionately in relation to blacks, and blacks are in disproportionate higher rate of violent crimes. Now, the crimes that you're talking about are the quote-unquote crimes or laws that were broken leading up to the deaths of these recent shootings by police, like the Eric Garner, he was selling loose cigarettes. The guy in Minnesota, he was pulled over for a broken taillight, and I'm not sure what the Louisiana issue was, but you can assume that most of these were nonviolent offenses, and that ties into something that I wanted to bring up, and that is that most people who are in prison for nonviolent offenses, like something like 80%, right? I played that Anarchy Ball audio for you. And
yeah, like, but not for the audience.
But not for the audience. And audience, we can play it for you. We're kind of leading up to it.
Before we get too much further into this podcast, I just want to play for the audience the Anarchy Ball video regarding the shootings that we make reference to. So here you go.
The last few days have been very unfortunate. At the time of writing this, there are 4 dead police officers with 6 more injured, all in response to the seemingly unjustified shootings of 2 black men. The problem is that it's very rare that anyone stops and asks why, to get to the actual cause of the issues that people seek to fix. The last few days and months have seen numerous incidents of high-profile deaths caused by police. Be it Philando Castile in Minnesota, Tamir Rice, Eric Garner, Freddie Gray, or Walter Scott, all of them have one thing in common. When they talked to the police, they were either doing nothing, as was the case with Tamir Rice, or were committing a crime in which there was no victim, such as selling untaxed cigarettes or driving with a broken taillight. In this case, people call for policing the police, but it's very rare that you hear anyone call for getting rid of the idiotic laws which started these interactions to begin with. Victimless crimes are the epitome of retarded. I want you to know something. 80% of today's prisoners are non-violent offenders, meaning 80% of people in prison right now shouldn't fucking be there. I know people who are calling for tougher laws. I know people who are calling for deaths of police officers. Neither of those choices will do anything to stop these type of things from happening. More laws only leads to more police interactions, which only leads to more chances for shootings to happen. Obviously, the death of anyone is horrific, and hunting down people simply because of their occupation is ridiculous. No change is going to come with actual system change. Perhaps we should start with getting rid of it. Let's start the change by getting rid of laws which lead to victimless crimes. Since I started recording this, Obama has already came out and blamed the guns. I find it funny that pretty much the liberal stance is that cops are evil bastards who kill people for no reason, but at the same time, they believe we should be disarmed to these evil bastards who kill people for no reason.
But the numbers are that 80% of those in prison are in prison for nonviolent offenses, and the majority of those are likely due to the drug war. And that, of course, ties into, you know, why there's a disproportionate number of blacks doing crime, because they're being persecuted in a drug war, and conversely, on the other end of the spectrum, they're being driven out of being able to get jobs by, you know, such practices as minimum wage and things like that.
Yeah, absolutely. When you make lawful employment
level,
impossible. No, I was going to make that exact same point. When you make lawful employment impossible, what else can you turn to? How else are you going to make a buck? You can either go into the military and murder people, can go into the drug trade, or some other sort of illicit theft or what have you. And then the drug trade shouldn't even be illegal. I mean, people are free to do with their own bodies what they want. That's why people are responsible for their own bodies. And we're talking about self-ownership. You know, you are responsible for what you put into your body. People want to make laws restricting drugs or alcohol or sugar, and I'm going off on tangents here, but self-ownership decrees that it's up to you to decide what you put in your body. And no matter how you illegalize whatever, you're still going to be able to get it. You can't legislate human behavior. Get drugs are illegal. Most of the drugs in this country are illegal, or at least the high narcotic versions of them. I guess there's always all kinds of variants. I'm not a huge expert on drugs, but it seems like, you know, heroin's illegal, but methadone isn't, and it's all made with the same stuff. So it's really just you're splitting hairs. But since some guys in suits decided that one thing was illegal and one thing wasn't, then all of a sudden you're artificially restricting the supply, so the value goes up and the quality gets erratic. But you're talking about self-ownership to decide what I'm going to put in my own body. It's nobody else's business what I'm going to put in my own body. I mean, you got people like, I don't know, Bloomberg, who decided that it was illegal to buy a cup of soda that's like more than a certain number of ounces. Well, you just buy two sodas, but you have no moral right to restrict how much soda I put in my body in the first place. And I am going off on bizarre tangent rant, and I think I've lost my way. Daniel, if you could ground me a little bit, please.
Yeah, I think that we're both kind of rambling here, and so this is going to be a hard episode to listen to, folks, not only because of the subject matter, but our delivery, so apologies on that one. But what we've talked about so far is, the shootings that appear to be race-related. I think we sort of diffused that a little bit, and the fact that the narrative is that it is a race issue and the whole Black Lives Matter thing, I think, is a bit disingenuous, to say the least. And our point is that let's remove race from the issue and say, you know, why are cops out there to begin with? Like, why is that a thing? You know, it's not moral. These laws that they're enforcing are immoral. They're nonviolent issues that shouldn't pertain to anyone else. They're related to drugs or a broken taillight or whatever. If there's not a violent aggression being perpetrated, then there shouldn't be any repercussions upon anyone. That's the non-aggression principle, right? Right there.
Right. So you got a guy like Eric Garner, who's in New York, and he's selling loose cigarettes on the street corner. And as I recall from the story, I'm going by memory, this is a while ago now, but he was standing outside of a kind of like a convenience store place. And the owner, and I don't know, I think he was on public property though, right? I mean, you were talking about a public street, so sidewalk. He was doing a thing. He was filling a market need, right? I mean, people weren't buying them. He would be out of business. So he was obviously feeling a desire for people to buy loose cigarettes. But the store owner, he couldn't compete with Eric Garner. He couldn't just break open his packs and sell loose cigarettes for whatever reason. Through some state law, I don't know. Maybe through some agreement with the tobacco manufacturers, what have you. But for whatever reason, he couldn't compete. So he decided to call in the state Gestapo to come in and have an altercation with this guy, who they then wrestle to the ground, choke him out, murder him. Should this even exist? The idea of sicking these mad dog people on other human beings, I think, should really be examined. People think that they're calling a good guy when you call the cops. You're calling just a human being. You're calling somebody that maybe they've had a little bit of training as far as attacking people goes, as far as yelling at people go, but you're really calling a fallible human being, and you're calling a fallible human being with a gun,
right?
Who will not hesitate, right? Who's not going to hesitate to murder somebody if they feel that they're being challenged by, guess what, another human being who has every right to be there. So, yeah, I just think that, you know, I am against the idea of cops in general, but especially. Think again how before you go and call these people on somebody who's just not doing something you don't like. You know, you're just doing something you don't like. If someone is like smoking in somewhere you don't think they should be smoking, or I don't know, whatever, doing any number of things, or injecting something into their body, or whatever. Think twice before you call these killers. And not every one of them is a killer. Not everyone. There are plenty of intelligent, good people. But if you're doing something immoral and you're calling it your job, that doesn't make it right. just because somebody's hired you to do a thing. If I hire some assassin to kill somebody, that doesn't mean all of a sudden he's a moral person just because he's being paid to do a thing. If you're hiring somebody to attack and intimidate and coerce people, it's on the person that's doing it. I'm not threatening a cop to go, well, actually, through the state apparatus, they're essentially, well, no, they're not being threatened. They're just being paid. Anyway, the whole system's immoral. I've kind of run off track here. I'm frustrated. It's so much stuff.
Yeah, I agree. There's so much stuff I want to say, and it's like it's coming out as a word salad, so that's kind of unfortunate.
Yeah, it's a big jumble. I apologize to everyone trying to listen to this right now. I'm sorry.
Yeah, it's terrible. So I had a whole bunch of thoughts while you were discussing, and I can't really recall very many of them at the moment. But I do want to say that sometimes I'm going to use the argument that I used in our last episode that was the pragmatic argument where you save yourself to fight another day. And that is what I call the Top Gun argument, where he says, you don't own that plane, the taxpayers do. You save your plane to fight another day or whatever. And so I would just throw some, very loose advice out there into the ether that if you are going to be involved in an altercation with a police officer, you got to know a couple of things. Number one, like you were saying, they're trained in violence. They're trained to command authority and escalate a situation until compliance has been met. And so they will not de-escalate. It's on you, unfortunately. And again, pragmatically, it's on you to present yourself as not a threat to them so that you don't trigger them in some way to perceive you as a threat and potentially, murder you. And that is unfortunate.
Yeah, and that just pisses me off. That is such the slave compliance, obedient to God type crap. Like, I have to prostrate myself before my betters so that they won't whip me. Fuck that. But I also don't want to die. So you kind of got me over a barrel here. I don't want to do either one of these things. I don't want to die. And I also don't want to be some bootlick sycophant where I like accept this person's authority over me. I don't. I don't accept that they have any authority over me. I accept that they will attack me and possibly murder me if I don't do what they say. But these people are revered. When a cop dies, it's like a huge deal. And everybody goes, oh my God, a cop dies. And where's the love for all the people that they've threatened and murdered themselves. They just get treated like these God figures, and they are the ones going around acting like jackboot thugs. And then they get surprised when cops are hated. Look what you're doing, man.
Yeah, I agree. And like I was saying, they're not trained to de-escalate a situation. They're trained to escalate a situation until compliance has been made. And it's an unfortunate circumstance when you're in an altercation like that.
And if anybody else did that.
Yeah. I'm not saying it's moral at all. I'm just saying that if you want to survive the situation, there's a couple of things that you should do. And one of the things I learned in one of my firearms trainings, I did a week-long course with a guy named Asad Ayub. He's a police officer in Connecticut and also does firearm training. And he was saying that you want to show the officer that you're not a threat to them in any way. So, like, if you're pulled over, turn on your dome light. Make sure you have all of your papers in order so that they're easy to reach and not, like, down below you or to the side, so maybe up top or something along those lines. Make sure that everything's in order. Have your arms and hands up and invisible where they can be seen when the officer approaches. If you do have a concealed carry permit and a firearm on you, do not say the word gun at any time. But calmly mention to the officer that you have a concealed carry permit and identify where it is and where your firearm is. And anytime they say anything to you, like a command of some sort, and you're going to hate this, but repeat it back slowly to them and then say, okay, I'm reaching for this now. It is in this area. Is that okay? And this will greatly increase the likelihood of you surviving this event, even if your pride and ego may be a bit abused and bruised. And I know you're going to, be pissed about this, but as Marcellus Wallace says to Butch the boxer in Pulp Fiction, fuck pride. If it's a matter of, you're over that barrel, right? You can either maintain your pride and get shot, or you can swallow your pride a little bit, save your plane to fight another day.
Can I go over there, Massa? Can I go to the bathroom, please, my lord?
Well, as you were saying,
asking for permission.
As soon as they flip those lights on, that is a direct threat to your person. They are putting you.
Absolutely, it is.
Right, and so
and
the moral,
acting
the moral
and treating
question
them
goes away. The moral question
and
goes
treating
away.
Them
There's a gun
I understand.
In your face.
I agree. I agree there's a gun in your face. But acting as if they are an authority further perpetuates it and reinforces their behavior. You go around treating these thugs like they're gods, they're going to get a god complex. They're just people who think that it's okay to go around and attack people. They think they have some sort of moral imperative, some sort of societally handed down moral authority to go around and initiate force against people. And every time they interact with another person, they treat them like they're some sort of god. Well, and then they run into somebody who doesn't, who actually has a backbone, who actually stands up for themselves. They're going to feel challenged. And they're going to go, what's going on? This slave's talking back to me. And yeah, they're going to beat the crap out of the guy. They're going to kill him. If everybody started treating these people like other human beings and going, what the hell are you doing? Pointing a gun in my face. What the hell are you doing? Pulling me over, threatening me. What the hell? You know, these cops are not the smartest. And they're just people. They're the people we went to school with. They're the people down the street from you. I think they're misguided. I think they've been propagandized and trained to see the people that they supposedly take care of as less than human beings. Now, I'm not talking them for every single one of them, of course. But all I can go is by their actions. And I understand that the worst of their behavior is what gets publicized. I agree. But even the best cop, even the cop that doesn't, even the Andy Griffith of cops, still goes around threatening people whether you realize it or not. Whether you realize it or not, whenever you flick on your cherries on the top of your car, whenever you go and you talk to somebody and you put your hand on your hip next to your gun, that is an implied threat. So just be aware of that. And that's my rant for that part. It's really frustrating, Daniel.
No, I agree. And if I may, sir, I'm going to bring up one other thing that's suggested, and this is by Bob Wenzel, Target Liberty.
Is this more bootlicking?
It is more bootlicking. But this one you might like.
Sweet.
Might
like. I love bootlicking.
And this article
will be so good.
This will be pasted down below as well. But basically, he says, what needs to be understood is that the police, when it comes down to it, are concerned about two things. Number one, not getting killed, and number two, collecting their paychecks. Now, I don't necessarily agree with him on this entirely, you know, because I think a lot of them will enjoy the power trip that they get. But he says, to the degree that you put up any physical resistance to a cop, his concern becomes more focused on not being killed, therefore escalating the situation, etc. And he'll see that as noncompliance and therefore a threat. And if you're a big man, which the guy in Louisiana was, and you're putting up even mild resistance, they'll be trained to escalate and take you down. And obviously, you know, in this case, go way overboard. But his advice is to not let them play that game, not let the officer play that game. So don't get it into a physical altercation and on you, you know, try to de-escalate it. And one of the ways you do that is once you show him that you're not a physical threat to him, then you start giving him some thoughts that maybe you're a threat to him on a paycheck level. So if you're stopped, you know, don't consent to a search or anything, and you say something like this, quote, you know, my lawyers tell me to never consent to a search. So until I talk to them, I'm going to pass on the search consent, end quote. And what this does is it brings to mind that you know the laws and you have lawyers, plural, and that if they don't follow everything to the book, they could be in some deep shit. And so it's a little bit of a fuck you back to them to make sure that they don't escalate the situation into a physical altercation that risks your life any further than has already been threatened.
I see that you're making some sense, but the whole notion that you're supposed to bootlick at all. I mean, would you bootlick to some guy that's mugging you on the street? Would you go, thank you for mugging me, boot guy? Would you, for sticking a knife in my face? This is so wonderful. I just love it. Would you? Would anybody? Has anybody ever been mugged and had, oh, that was a fantastic experience. Can't wait to do that again.
No one's saying it's a fantastic experience, Robert. I mean, the mugging, of course, you know, it's your wallet or your life, right? So what are you going to choose? And the same situation with an officer, you know, your pride or your life. Make your choice.
So bootlick and treat them like they're gods.
Or go home that night.
It just perpetuates it, Daniel. It perpetuates it. It's like when Stalin... And this is an extreme analogy, but whatever. I don't care. When Stalin was taking all the people away to the Gulag, and Alexander Solzhenitsyn, who wrote the Gulag Archipelago, was talking. He was interviewed years later, whatever. And I could be stealing this from some other conversation. I don't know. But when people were, you know, just being taken away to the gulags. They lamented, you know, sitting there talking in the gulag to each other. You know, if we had just sent, you know, if a couple of their thugs had come out to go collect people and just hadn't come home that night, how many people could we have saved?
Right. And
if the cops get it in their mind that they're doing the wrong thing, that their job is illegitimate, that they are not wanted, they are counterproductive, that they are they're being threatened because they are a threat, not like they deserve some sort of fake respect, because they don't. And every time a cop saves a kid, you know, or does something good, they've initiated violence and aggress against countless others. So the good is far outweighed by the bad. And all of these things, and just think of it this way. This is also a government monopoly. Even if you think that there should be some special group of thugs that get to run around and attack people, we don't even know if it's the best group of thugs that get to run around and attack people, because there's no competition. You get the worst people in there, and what do you have to judge them by? There's no other force with which to compete. You know, I was watching Hot Fuzz last night. Pretty funny movie, but pretty brutal from my perspective. The main character, you know, they changed the name from the Metropolitan Police Force to the Metropolitan Police Service, as if changing the name makes a difference, because they don't like the way the word force sounds, because it sounds bad, and rightfully so. But changing the name to service, just because you're sugarcoating it, doesn't mean it isn't poison. And I don't know if I can, if I brought that back around to a point. That's how rants go. I just start off, and then where it ends up, who knows?
Yeah, well, you're certainly the dogmatic out of the two of us when it comes to this type of stuff.
Yeah.
I think that would get you killed, and I would prefer to not see that happen. Now, likening this...
How many lives would I save?
Likening this to the gulag, well, we know that that's not what's happening here, you know? So that's a bit of a stretch. I mean, I get what you're saying. I understand the point of what you're saying is that they will stop
people
doing
are being aggressive against?
They are. But
so when Stalin took away people to the gulag, he was aggressing against them.
Yes.
When cops go up and pull somebody over, they are aggressing against them.
Yes.
I see no difference.
In the moral world, there is no difference that a threat is being made in both cases, though the threat is far more certain in the Stalin case. Like, you are definitely going to the gulag no matter what you do, unless you fight back, and then you're probably going to die.
Yes.
In the police altercation situation, if it escalates, you have a high likelihood of dying. But it can be de-escalated,
yes,
and you can go home that night. So
if you supplicate yourself before your God, yes.
Yeah, so there's a difference, right? We admit there's a difference.
There is a difference in that if you bootlick enough, there was no amount of bootlicking that Shelton Eaton could have done to prevent himself from going to the gulag, yes.
Okay, so there is a distinction to be made. And so I'm not condoning either action, Solzhenitsyn or Stalin or people wearing blue costumes. I'm saying that they're both immoral and both bad. But I'm saying that the number of options that you have in that situation are different. And so, you know, if you're out on the street and you're pulled over, fighting back is probably you're not going to win, right?
So how, Daniel, ask me this question. How do we get across to the cops the idea that they are unwanted, that their jobs are illegitimate, that they are dealing, that they are a human being dealing with another human being, and that they have no special rights?
Well, I think that goes back to the greater question of how do you get away from the belief in authority and government, you know, and that would just be a part of that. So, you know, that's something that is one of the big challenges that we all face. I mean, I think, of course, pointing out that it's immoral to begin with certainly helps. But, you know, the other side of it is, I mean, these people are, like you were saying, trained killers. They're trained to escalate situations until they get compliance. They are fed a whole bunch of propaganda about how they're the thin blue line protecting everyone from a state of chaos, and that they're doing such a wonderful job, and it's such a difficult job, and it's such a dangerous job, when, you know, it's actually like not even the top 50 of dangerous jobs in the world. Logging is like number one, and fishing is number two or something like that. In 2013 or 2014, only like 23 or 24 officers were killed in the line of duty. And, you know, anytime somebody dies, it's bad. It's a horrible situation. But to think that that they're doing this benevolent, great service and that it's this huge risk situation is just not true. And so I think that kind of ties everything back to You can't go after the cops themselves and get them to stand down en masse. You know, it's going to be a falling away of the belief in authority by the general population through education and through you know, people learning and not participating that's going to drive that away. But, you know, you've got to survive to get to that point. You can't just get in an altercation and escalate it yourself. You know, that's not going to get you anywhere.
No. No, you're not.
So, yeah, fuck pride and live to fight another day.
I just – all right, moving on. Or talking about other aspects of it.
Well, can I bring up one other thing?
No.
So like you were saying, they're mad dogs, right? And they're told all this stuff and they believe it, that they have authority, they're in a position of power, whatever. Well, the other thing to know is that on average, the IQs of police officers are lower than the general population. And there's information about this. I'll try to find a link to it, and I'll include it down below. But I just wonder if that is another factor in you know, how you get these obedient enforcers who can't think critically and perceive everything as a threat and get built up with all this bravado about how they're doing such a great thing, and et cetera, et cetera. So that's...
And I'd also make the point – that's a good point. But I'd also make the point that is anybody really surprised when cops are killed? I mean – do they shake their heads and say, oh, geez, it's such a dangerous job. These guys are so wonderful. It's a thankless job. And then they're going out and risking their lives, blah, blah, blah. They're going out and aggressing against people.
Right, but I think
that's... No, they're going out and aggressing people. You can't have thousands, tens of thousands, hundreds of thousands of cops are in this country. You can't have all these people running around attacking people and not expect some sort of consequence to happen. That's just unrealistic.
It's amazing that it's only, you know, 23 or 24 in 2013. And granted, the Dallas thing was, what, 5 or 6 killed and 10 or 11 shot all in one day. So that's, you know, it's a big spike. But, you know, to your point, that it's not more than that is surprising, right?
Well, it just shows that this country is full of a bunch of fantastic bootlickers.
Or it shows that people who are armed are attacked less likely than if they are unarmed.
Attacked by cops? Less likely?
No, what I'm saying is that police officers are killed far less than the general population. And
yes,
it's because they're all armed, right?
True. Yeah, you don't see any mass shootings at cop shops, police stations.
Right, it's only gun-free zones.
You see them in gun-free zones, yeah.
Yeah, so
because I guess... armed zones.
That's my point. Like the risk is actually much lower than logging and fishing and all these things, working on a crab boat in Alaska, whatever. Their IQs are lower. They're pumped up.
Right.
They're usually the guys, you know, the guys that the kind of dumb jock guys who have superiority complex, who had that.
Or the people that went into the military and came back with no other job skills.
Right, and they get totally fucked in the military, right? You know.
Yeah.
So it's not a surprise. My whole point of like the last 15 minutes of trying to make some sense is that you cannot reason with them on an individual level. They are traumatized. They are scared. They perceive everything as a threat. They're not very smart. They're told they're doing a great thing. So, and they're trained to escalate a situation until they get compliance. You trying to reason with them is not going to work. You trying to overpower them is not going to work. So what's your only other option? You know, get out of the situation in the best way you can. And that's my point.
Well, I agree. I mean, well, trying to look at it from their perspective, you, every time you pull somebody over, every time you answer a call to go to a house and then you're knocking on a door, you don't know what you're getting into. You don't know if the door opens up and there's a shotgun pointing in your face. You don't know if you walk up to that car and it's going to be the last time you ever do anything or not. And that probably leads into the fear. Absolutely. If I were doing that, I would be pretty much afraid all the time. I mean, even though I'm wearing like body armor and I pull my gun out at like the slightest whim. I mean, if all the YouTube videos I've seen are indicative, but there's a reason. I mean, it's because you're doing something wrong. You shouldn't be there in the first place.
I agree.
And honestly, people shouldn't be calling them as much as they do. It's like, I know the cop I answer is like, well, people are always calling us to do things, calling us to protect them from X, Y, or Z. Well, as we've said in the past, cops are not really very good at protecting anybody. In fact, the best person to protect you is you. Cops are like crime historians. And this is an argument or something I've stolen from, I think, Steph or somebody. They will come after the crime has been committed, after you're already dead or your family's been murdered or whatever, and try and piece together what's happened. And then maybe go and try and find the person that did it. But they can't prevent anything from happening. They can't protect you. So protect yourself. Learn how to protect yourself. Become friends with your neighbors. You don't need to rely on these rent-a-call-a-dial-a-thug people that are sketchy at best, I want to say. You know, you talk about government services and how good they are. They're generally not very good. Generally not. And you talk about your guaranteed health care, like government health care in like Canada or whatever, quote unquote free, but the quality level is generally not very good. And you wouldn't even know if you had the best, even if it was good, because there's nothing to compare it against. Okay.
All right. So there is a thing I sent you, it was posted on the Facebook, and it's related to an article on, I think, Washington Post, where it talks about Alton Sterling, one of the guys who was killed, and Eric Garner, and the double standard of the side hustle. And this person's comment is that it's an interesting article because she often hears people defend these killings by saying that they were breaking the law. And she asks, but how many people do you know who are using Airbnb? Would you say that the police were justified in killing someone who lists their apartment? And obviously you and I would say, well, hell no. You know, like Eric Garner was selling loose cigarettes, Airbnb is you renting out your own property. It's similar to Uber. You use your own vehicle for something. And so it appears that she's saying, you know, like, hey, these things are ridiculous, and why should they lead to somebody being killed? But then down below, one of her friends says that we actually need to crack down on people selling their apartments on Airbnb as well as Uber. It should be considered a black market. Lucy's and DVDs pale in comparison. And she, the person who originally posted this says, oh, I agree. The point is that someone shouldn't be shot over it, though. So what do they think is going to happen if you make something illegal and you have enforcement crack down on them? Like, that leads to escalation and altercation and shooting someone. Do you have comments?
Yeah, it's a direct line. It is a direct line. It really aggravates me when people say, well, I just voted for some law. I didn't actually do anything wrong. It's a direct line from making something illegal to having thugs with guns go and do something about it, to go and violently stop it or whatever. And it seems like since they're a couple steps removed, then they're somehow absolved of any wrongdoing. And I would say, yeah, you're not the guy that pulled the trigger, but you're essentially the person who ordered the person to pull the trigger. Because laws are mandates. They're not suggestions. They're not recommendations. They are commands. And if people don't follow them, they get thrown in jail. They get attacked. They get robbed. They get time stolen from probably the most precious commodity that we actually have. People get locked in cages. Their lives literally get ripped away from them for doing nothing to you, for just minding their own business, doing their own thing. And you say, you're doing something wrong. You're hurting yourself. You're doing whatever. And you're like, it's my property. I can do with it what I want. Not with your property. But I'll do this to my property. Leave me alone. But these bureaucrats and the busybodies and the control freaks want to make a law about things, which just increases the chances, if not directly leads to, the chance that the cop is going to come knocking on somebody's door because the guy's doing a thing that's all of a sudden been written down on a piece of paper and turned into a law and says all of a sudden you can't do it. And then violence happens. And it's like some sort of magic that absolves voters from that, any kind of moral culpability. Like as long as you remove it a couple steps, all of a sudden, hey, you didn't do it, you're not responsible. And that turned into a tirade about voting. But, you know, whatever, it's all connected.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, it is all interconnected and related. And I just love the cognitive dissonance here where she's pointing out that this article is saying, oh, you know, these laws are what led to these people being killed. And then down below, she's saying, but I agree with these laws. Like, that's your typical liberal
right.
left logic, you know. And not that we're right-wing conservatives. We're about as far as you can get from any spectrum. We're up and down. We're more freedom or less freedom. And we're for more freedom. We're for maximum freedom.
We are for maximum freedom. Yeah, how dare anybody give a ride to somebody or rent out their apartment to somebody? How dare they? Don't they see the harm that's happening? How much is they're attacking people? Yeah.
Yeah.
People don't understand that just because you have a business, that you are somehow immune from competition. Like, if you're in the hotel industry or the taxi industry, and somebody comes along with a way to make your essentially your business obsolete, then somehow you're entitled to some sort of protection, and that it shouldn't happen to you, that you shouldn't have to adapt to the changing marketplace, that you shouldn't have to provide a better service. Where would we be if the horse and buggy people successfully lobbied Congress to prevent all these new automobiles from coming around and taking over their business? Unfair competition, they would cry. We would still be hailing handsome cab rides. I mean, this is absolutely ridiculous. In Vancouver, and I know we talk about Uber a lot, but well, it's part of the business. They haven't had it. Uber got knocked out of there like 4 years ago, even though it's like this young tech city with horrible traffic. So it's like perfect. You want to alleviate traffic. You get fewer, more cars, you know, off the road. You consolidate people into cars. Hence Uber. It's what it does. It makes traffic better. But the taxi lobby successfully prevented it, and they classified Uber under the limo service. And they set the base minimum you could charge for a ride in a limo to be $75. So you can imagine what that would do to driving a person a couple blocks in an Uber. You're not going to pay $75 for that. So essentially outlaw Uber in that city. And it's just, what right do you have to protect one person? I mean, is the taxi industry any more legitimate? Is it somehow, do they have the right to not have to compete? I mean, what if Microsoft said, hey, I shouldn't have to compete against Apple. Come in here and prevent all these computers from being made. Or what have you? Any industry, pick an industry. Competition is great. It provides a better product to the consumer. It makes things better. You get more value for your money. And you have people whining and complaining to government to stop it. It's anti-consumer, and we are all consumers. We should feel violated. Hopefully you do.
So that's,
I have
course,
some sort of a sign-off catchphrase where the rant is over, where I drop the mic or something. I don't know.
No, yeah, that'd be helpful
sort of
for me to know when I can come in.
Yeah, I should have some sort of a rant, lemon out sort of a thing. I don't know. I'll think of something.
Yeah, you come up with something. We'll put it on a T-shirt and a mug, and people will just snap that right up. And so,
yeah.
You know, that's our Uber segment, everyone, since we talk about Uber on every episode. Not that we're the
weekly Uber
show. we don't want to be the Uber show. But, you know, I think we've gone through quite a bit already in a very, very rambling fashion. I hope you made some sense overall. Is there anything else that we have on the docket that you want to cover? Because I can go a little bit longer.
Yeah, I want to talk about this Michelle Carter thing. So this story got buried because of all the other craziness. But we're talking about this Michelle Carter and Conrad Roy III. So they were friends, apparently, sort of friends. I don't know. Terrible friends. In Massachusetts. And she has been charged with involuntary manslaughter after Conrad committed suicide. And you'd say, okay, that's weird. Why would she be charged for manslaughter after he committed suicide? Well, Conrad doesn't own himself. He isn't responsible for his own actions because Michelle sent him a bunch of text messages. Now, these text messages are pretty horrific. This is like, tonight is the night. It's painless and quick. You always say you're going to do it, but you never do. I just want to make sure tonight's the real thing. Basically calling the guy a pussy. I think your parents know you're in a really bad place. I'm not saying they want you to do it, but I honestly feel like they can accept it. Things like that. So she's essentially giving him advice to kill himself. You're trying to help your friend who's in a bad place, and her advice was to kill yourself. This is like a big elaborate scheme to not have anyone ever ask her for advice again. But if we were all liable for the advice we give, whatever consequences, if anybody ever follows it, that would just break human interaction. Anytime you ever give anybody advice for anything, and they go and do it, then you would be liable and charged with whatever happened to them. Oh, yeah, you should start a business. Oh, they started a business and it failed. Now you're liable for the money they spent. Oh, you should jump off a bridge. And then they go and jump off a bridge. Oh, you killed that guy. No, we're responsible for our own actions. That's why advice is free. And you get what you pay for. And everybody knows that. Yeah, she said some horrific things. Yeah, she's basically telling the guy to go kill himself. But this is not how it works. This, you got anything to say on this one, Daniel? This just seems so ass backward to me.
Well, I'm trying to follow from how you told it. It does seem a little bit odd. It reminds me of The Silence of the Lambs, where Hannibal Lecter tells Miggs a whole bunch of stuff in the night, and Miggs swallows his own tongue. So, you know, they're pointing out that Hannibal killed him with his words, but, you know, there's not a whole lot they can do about it because he didn't actually, like, attack him.
Oh, I don't remember that one. Is that in the, where he's in prison?
Yeah, yeah, it's when Jodie Foster first goes and visits him, and Miggs says something inappropriate to her, and so the next time she comes and visits, she finds out that Miggs has died from swallowing his own tongue after Lecter was whispering to him that night.
I see, uh-huh. So you're saying that words have power, and that you should be liable if you tell somebody to go kill themselves, and then they do?
No, I was making reference to a film made by Jonathan Demme in 1991 starring Anthony Hopkins and Jodie Foster. That's what I was doing.
Oh, you weren't making some sort of moral argument? Oh, okay.
No, I was saying that the situation reminds me of that.
Yes.
And I also will mention that there are laws right now, and we all know how much we appreciate laws, where if you do give, say, financial advice or legal advice, that you are liable in some respects and that you have to be licensed and have all sorts of disclaimers and all this other stuff. And usually that's for advice that someone would pay for. So I guess you're saying that, you know, advice is worth what you pay for it, and most advice is free. It's kind of your get-out-of-jail-free card on that one. But, you know, I think that there is some precedent in today's world that people are in some ways held accountable for the advice that is given. I'm not saying that's right or wrong.
Do you think that?
I'm just pointing it out because it didn't make it into your description.
I see. Do you have an opinion on whether that's right or wrong?
No, I think that people own themselves, and they should be making decisions based on the best available knowledge that they possess. And if they choose to get advice from others, they should weigh it carefully and then make their own determination.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Even if you were to, you know, that's why people get second opinions of doctors. That's why any number of things happen when you're dealing with people asking for advice. You don't necessarily just take what one person says. You're trying to get as clear and complete a picture of the thing you're trying to solve as you can before you make an informed decision. But to say, hey, this guy told me to do X, and I did X, and therefore he's bad and he owes me something, well, that violates self-ownership. You're saying that he's responsible for you, not you responsible for you.
All right, I have an interesting related situation.
Okay.
So 15 or so years ago, I was driving home from work, and there was very heavy traffic heading back into town. There was a baseball game that night, so very heavy traffic. And there was a stoplight that I was stopped at, and I was waiting to turn left across traffic. And the traffic going back into town, so opposite me, was a green light but stopped due to cars being stacked up, and there was room in between the intersection for me to turn left. There were two lanes and a parking lane, and the first two people both waved me through, saying, oh yeah, it's go ahead, we're not going to be able to go anywhere. But my car got hit by a third vehicle that was driving in the parking lane. So I followed their advice, the two people who said it was okay for me to go. Do you think that there were any consequences in that situation?
What were the situations as far as the person driving in the parking lane?
Well, he was an off-duty police officer, so obviously the accident was my fault.
Right. So, I mean, is this a lane that's being used? I mean, is it fine for – I don't know what the stipulations are.
Well, I did look into it. It is a parking lane and no parking during certain hours. During these particular hours, it was a parking lane, not a driving lane, though the laws on the books say if there's room, you can drive on it. So technically, he was okay to be driving in there, even though there were cars parked shortly after passing the intersection. So he would have had to go, you know, merge into one of the other two available lanes, like almost immediately after passing the intersection.
I see.
So he was basically
being
a dickhole. He was cutting around people because there were cars parked, you know, further up the intersection as well. So he had to dart to the parking lane to pass through the intersection and then cut through like a dick. He was basically being a dick.
He was being a dick driver, absolutely. You see those in city all the time. Absolutely, okay. Well, I would agree that, yeah, those two drivers gave you some bad advice. You took it and you decided to risk it. I've made that kind of turn before where, yeah, the traffic has a green light, but they're not moving because it's Seattle, and Seattle traffic is like foobar constantly. But I would say that, yeah, that accident was, I mean, you took a risk and you hit, I think he was in a ditch, but he wasn't wrong. I would say, yeah, that was probably your fault. I mean, based on what you're saying.
Yeah, though it doesn't feel like it was my fault, right? Like, I was being very cautious. You know, I mean, it literally was an accident, and had he not been driving in the parking lane nor driving like a dick, it would not have happened. So, in
right.
my mind, a lot of the responsibility should have been on him. But, you know, I took the risk, I guess. And I would say that the people who waved me through were not necessarily saying it's safe for me to proceed. They were saying that they would not crash into me if I went in front of them.
Right.
That's what they were saying.
Right. Right. They were not saying, hey, I don't see anybody else coming, you should go. They're saying, hey, I will let you go. Right. And I think that's all you can assume in that situation, is that only the information that that person is giving you is based on their own selves, and that's it, not anything else.
All right. Then let me say
yeah,
another
so,
thing.
Oh, okay.
Well, no, I have a different situation, but if you have more comment on this one, feel free.
No. Throw me another situation.
All right. Here's another situation. I've visited New York City several times. And it's very commonplace for people to cross against the light. The people who live there are very used to this, and they time the traffic and know when they can go and when not. And after some time, you start noticing that the tourists will follow along yet a step or two behind these people. And they'll sort of assume that because person A is going, that it's okay for them to go. But person A, you know, lives there and is very used to gauging the speed of the traffic and whether they can make it or not. And so I saw on so many occasions close calls with people who left the curb, you know, moments after someone who was timing it, thus assuming that it was safe to go, and they almost got hit many times. And so it's not even as if the person A was even giving advice. It was just that they were going, and because they were going, other people saw them go, and they assumed that it was okay to go.
Yeah, when I was in Thailand, you'd see there are big stretches in, like, downtown areas where there's just, like, kind of highways, and there's really no way across them. So you'd see, like, people standing in the middle of the road. It would go, like, one lane and then just be standing on the yellow line as traffic is just whipping by them until they could make it one more lane. And traffic is – you'd see, like, old ladies doing it. Now, in a way, right, she's giving advice, like, hey, look what I'm doing. You could do this. I looked at that and goes, well, I'm not doing that. I'm not ever doing that. Why would I do that? Apparently it was good for her, but you're responsible for yourself. And to judge for yourself. Now, you're right. You have these tourists who are kind of going off of what everybody else is doing, monkey see, monkey do kind of thing. But, yeah, you got to be aware. You got to judge for yourself, man. You see some crazy lady in the middle of a highway making her way across 1 minute at a time. It's not necessarily the best idea. Maybe she's done it a million times. And it might be okay for her. She has a pretty good idea of what she's doing. She's comfortable doing it. But it's not necessarily the best idea for you.
Yeah, and that's basically the reason I bring this up is because I was recently talking to my 3-year-old daughter about crossing the street, and she's very good about being careful and looking both ways, and we make a big point of it. But I told her about being in New York and watching other people go and assuming that it's safe, and I said, nope, if you see other people go, you still look every time.
Good advice, Daniel. At least I judge it to be good advice.
Well, thank you, sir. So do we have anything else that we want to discuss? Did we figure anything out on that? I basically think that we got back to advice is not a criminal act. Should not be a crime.
Advice shouldn't be a crime. Selling loose cigarettes shouldn't be a crime. Selling DVDs shouldn't be a crime.
Giving a ride.
Putting things in your body. Giving people rides shouldn't be a
Letting
crime.
Letting stay in your house.
Yeah. All kinds of things should not be crimes yet. Magical force of government. They somehow, you can make them a crime and still have them, and then have them be moral somehow. Some sort of alchemy going on there.
Yeah, certainly some alchemy. And the thought that, you know, people seem to have is if something is wrong in society, they want a law about it. And as we were saying earlier, you know, laws come with enforcement, and enforcement comes with escalation and threats. And so to think that a law is going to solve anything, it's just adding fuel to the fire.
Yeah, and it's the caveman response, right? Somebody's doing something you don't like, so you hit them over the head with it, or hit them over the head with a club, or whatever. The lowest idiotic response. We're smarter than that. We're better than that, people. We've got these giant brains. It's like we hardly ever use them.
Indeed, sir. Well, I think I sort of used mine on this one. I don't know. I mean, I think that this show was a very difficult one to make, to listen to, listener. I'm going to listen to it before I post it, and I'm going to cringe the whole time. I'll tell you that.
Yeah, I didn't hear any of that. Either your microphone's crapping out or our connection's crapping out. I don't know, but I will say that this has been a very difficult episode. I don't know. I know I ranted a lot. I don't know if I had actually made any points or if I'm just like preaching to the choir and you actually kind of understand my gibberish. But yeah, this is what you get from me. So if you don't like it, don't listen to it. Or, you know, enact a law that says I have the right to be attacked if I try and make this, you know, because, you know, making podcasts is wrong or immoral or something.
Yeah, how dare you?
Indeed.
So with that, I think we should start wrapping this up. How about you give us another update on your book there, Robert Johnson?
You know, I kind of had a thought today about my book. It's called Kid Tamarack, Wizard for Hire. But he's really just like a working class Joe. And if there's any kind of inspiration as far as what he does is, it'd be obviously like it's kind of akin to Ghostbusters. It's a couple of, he's like a normal guy that does like, you know, fantastic things. So that's a little bit of inspiration from that. So if you're thinking about it, oh, wizards, they're like a bunch of dragons and stuff. No, maybe there's a dragon in it, or maybe there's a dragon that exists in the world somewhere, but it wouldn't be necessarily like any dragon, you know, or have seen before.
When you say Ghostbusters, you're not talking about the crap fest of the new Ghostbusters, right? You're talking about like old classic Ghostbusters?
I'm talking about old classic Ghostbusters, but hey man, don't shit all over new Ghostbusters. It might be amazing. You don't know. Although you probably know, and it's probably going to be terrible. But hey, I like Kristen Wiig, and I think she's talented, and there's a chance that it might be funny. But this is not a movie podcast, so we can talk about it. I do have thoughts. Just so you know that it's called Kid Tamarack, Wizard for Hire. And hopefully the for hire part kind of clues you in that it's not like your typical like Harry Potter or whatever fantasy world. It's very much it's its own thing. I'll just say that much. I'm using the wizard word just because it kind of fits the best without making up my own word, which, you know, when you make up your own word, it's like, well, what is that? What is that even about? Give me some kind of a context. Well, it's a title. So I picked the wizard word to kind of give you an idea, even though it's, you know, there's no wands in the book. I'll say that much. There's no brooms. There's none of that crap. But there is crazy crap. Anyway, that's your weekly update with Kit Tamarack, Wizard for Hire.
Crazy crap.
Yeah, there's crazy crap. There's all kinds of silliness going on. I put in a dumb joke today. I wrote a dumb joke into the book, and I loved it. And it's real dumb, and I don't care.
Yeah. We'll look forward to that, folks, at the end of the year. That'll be available, and you can find out what that dumb joke is and the crazy crap that goes on. And speaking of crazy crap, this episode is about wrapped up. So we've been the Reed Rothbard Podcast. We've got ReedRothbard.com. We've got lectures, books, articles, this podcast, a bunch of other information. I'm going to be launching a tip jar. So if you find any value in what we're doing and you want to find a way to support us in any way, you'll be able to send us some dollar bills, y'all. So look for that in coming weeks. And with that, I think we'll sign off. So thank you very much, folks. Appreciate your time. Thank you for listening.
Take care, everybody. The Chipmunks. Chipmunk, we're the chipmunks, guaranteed to brighten your day. Do 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 do.